and our guests. It's only that I can't say this in my language, what they say when it's the first time, when there are people coming to your place, what happens. This whole thing of now you find to be on your own, and we are nowhere to be found. It's not, there's a closer terminology. It will make me to sit down and have to explain to you in English what really does. But it doesn't mean that we don't respect you or we don't... our apologies for delaying you. For those of you that is the first time that you're coming in front of the committee to present, make room for your... to change your flights and you must always make room for that. I at the same time we will ask you, but what about this wasteful and expenditure? I'm trying to loosen you, don't be tense. I'm trying to welcome you home. I saw you smiling when we're making a presentation, when the Council for Medicare Scheme was making a presentation and responding. I saw you smiling. Some of you guys are saying, their term is coming. We'll see if they will then be able to. We will. I have been sensitized that you are quite a delegation with a number of stakeholders. We will then be forced to go to our normalities of introduction. We introduce ourselves, and then after that, whoever is leading the team will introduce whoever is here, because we are to know who is here, except the observations that I have made in terms of gender. When you go back home, when you have to come back, you must address that. I think I will have to raise that. Fortunately, the Department of Health is here. We will next to me is Ms. Vuyoka Zuma Chalamba, who's the secretary of the committee. On my extreme right is Zube, who's our researcher. Next to him is Lindo Kuhle, who is our content advisor. Against the wall, it's Mbali, who's our committee assistant. I am Lindelwa Tunjwa. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Then members will introduce themselves. Then after that, it will be yourselves. How you do it, we are not going to be prescriptive. Over to you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, and evening. It's Dr. Susan Tembekwayo, member of the Committee of Health.
Good evening. I am Louisa James, member of the committee.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Fish Mahlalela. For me, still afternoon.
Is it afternoon or early evening?
Good afternoon. My name is Elvis Presley. Just kidding. That's committee member Wilma James. Good afternoon, my name is Nonhlanhla Ncube Ndaba. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for inviting us to come to make the presentation. We have quite a large delegation, so we do apologize, but I'd like people took time off. We were originally supposed to be with you tomorrow, so I do apologize that some of the prints will show tomorrow's thing, but we did, fortunately, Mr. Johannes Katla got all of us late yesterday afternoon, so we could make it and people to rearrange. But just in summary, we have the trade unions who are in the mines and work sector with us. They'll introduce themselves. We have the Chamber of Mines and particularly the gold mining companies. And then I've got my management team, which will the same. So I'm Barry Krishnasamy, the Compensation Commissioner in the Department of Health. We'll start with Dr. Mchali.
Nontlantla Mchali from the MPOD.
Good afternoon. I'm Meshack Mashangai, Director of Finance at CCOD.
Good evening. I'm Kayla Shpana from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, the Secretariat to the IMC for Mining Towns.
Good afternoon. I'm Sam Mulawuzi, the Deputy Commissioner.
Good afternoon, I'm Paul Marden, Labour Representative from Solidarity.
My name is Matevang Oparalake. I'm from NUMSA, representing Labour.
Don't worry about them, they know their time. You can continue.
Good evening, honourable members. My name is Shireen Fadesi from the Department of Health.
Dumelang, Lizuke Adam Litsile, Advisory Committee member and representing National Union of Mine Workers. Thanks.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Aubrey von Fieren, representing the Industry Chamber and the Gold Working Group.
Good evening, everybody. Paul Pretorius, also representing the Gold Working Group.
Good evening. My name is Andre Free. I'm from the CCOD.
Good evening. Ger van Heerden, CCOD.
I'm Vince Boetes from Harmony Gold.
Good evening. I'm Ivan Pillay from the National Department of Health.
Good evening, Chair. I'm Frank Makua, Minister of Health.
My name is Karisa Mapalle from PMG.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. We will then don't be apologetic about the your delegation. In fact, we appreciate it. It's only that, and we want to apologize for we may have created some stampede because we were supposed to come yesterday, but because of conditions beyond our control. We feel humbled that you heeded our call and you are here, and our apologies for that, but also our apologies for delaying you. That's what happens in this environment. It's not anything deliberate about that. The only thing is that unfortunately we don't have translation systems, so I won't. We'll request to people to speak English so that we are all accommodating. But I think Dr. Maricele is doing it deliberately because you are in a sector that you are supposed to know all 9 languages. But for the benefit of some of us, that's only like a note. Honorable Commissioner, I hand over to you. For the benefit of all who are coming for the first time so that we don't come back to this. A presentation is going to be made. Questions are going to be asked by members. You will then be expected to respond. How you respond will be dependent on you. So but it's not a one-to-one session. We will ask all questions and you will then respond to them. So I'm just making that for the benefit of those that may be coming for the first time. Over to you, Commissioner, for the presentation.
Thanks, Chairperson and honourable members. We've got a two-part presentation because we have an amended strategic plan and we have the annual performance plan for 17-18. So, I'll probably give both presentations, then we could take questions after that, unless members feel otherwise. Both documents were circulated in time, and so I'm quickly just going to remind the members that we're a unique part of the Department of Health in a sense that we're a frontline delivery cluster, as opposed to other parts of the Department of Health which doesn't deliver frontline services. And that creates a lot of stresses for us in terms of delivering medical services, x-ray, compensation payments. And further is the issue around the fact that we provide services within South Africa and outside South Africa. So, and the 1.2 million to 1.5 million ex-mine workers, about 400,000 of them are outside South Africa, in Mozambique, Lesotho, Swaziland, Botswana. And of course, there are fewer numbers in Zambia and Malawi, etc., as a legacy of the migrant labor system. Coal mining recruited locally. So the bulk of these workers tend to have been in gold mining in platinum, but coal recruited locally. So we suspect that the figures are probably closer to 2 million. Now, this goes back about 30 years, and we think in realistic terms about half of these ex-mine workers are still alive. So one of the big issues that face us is, firstly, frontline service delivery. A national department of health normally doesn't deal with frontline service delivery. Provinces deliver frontline delivery of services. The local government delivers frontline delivery of services. Secondly, due to the PFMA and range of other issues, for example, if I have to go together with Dr. Machali to Mafeteng in Lesotho to deliver health services, I have to get permission from the minister, because international travel, you have to get permission. And if there's an emergency to deal with the X-ray unit in Mafeteng, where we've just opened a one-stop service center now from the Global Fund grant, means that there are problems like that. So those are some of the issues that we have to input on. We have to provide access to post-mortem services, which is very problematic. These are the removal of hearts and lungs. Socioculturally, it's a problem. And we don't have frontline delivery mechanisms. We have to rely on other parts of the state apparatus to deliver this. And many of our people cannot access these services, especially in labor-sending areas, deep rural areas, Bazana, Flagstaff, Matatiel, Shashai, Inambani in Mozambique, etc. So these are some of the issues that we've picked up, overall linked to the issues around the CCOD. Just to tell you again, what is the quantum of the problem? So here's the 1.2 million, South Africa, a million ex-mine workers. The bulk of them are from the Eastern Cape, 300,000. Lesotho, 143,000, Mozambique, 104,000, etc. And in terms of the disease burden, you can see that TB was a major problem in the mining industry, particularly the gold mining industry. And of course, we have a very formal program now with the Chamber of Mines on screening for TB, and we have a healthy working relationship on trying to eliminate TB in the mining sector. By province, Eastern Cape, plus minus 300,000 ex-mine workers, then Northwest, etc. Just then to summarize some issues that face us in terms of the amendments that we are talking about later on. So in terms of this slide, you can see that QIDA in the Department of Labor, so members will recall there are two compensation systems, one in the Department of Labor and one in the Department of Health. By international conventions, International Labor Organization, International Social Security Agency in Geneva, social protection is normally the mandate of a Department of Labor. It so happened that this is an historical anomaly where you had a split system in South Africa between the Department of Health and Department of Labor. And I'll talk later on about the issues about moving towards an integrated compensation system. So this shows you where our act, ODMWA, Occupational Disease Mines and Works Act, covers the 400,000 current mine workers and this legacy of the 1.2 to 2 million ex-mine workers. And the QIDA fund covers 11 million current workers, and it's 70 billion there and inputs. And of course, QIDA mainly covers incident injury reporting. There's very few diseases that come through the QIDA system as opposed to our system in ODMWA. So our strategic plan is an amended strategic plan from the previous one in 2015. So the vision, mission, values were the same, legislative mandates, court rulings. The most important court ruling was the class action, which was last year, and of course there's an ongoing process of trying to do some settlement out of court, but that has a significant link because it's linked partly to this issue around compensable lung diseases, particularly silicosis and TB. The policy initiatives are mainly around the issues of the amendments to the Act that we want to talk to you about later on in the strat plan. So on performance outputs, as I came to you last year around about, I think it was August, when the portfolio committee requested us to make a presentation, we pointed out that we get voted funds which are not possible to continue with the business reforms. And the Chamber of Mines, the Gold Working Group, particularly the gold mining companies, the World Bank, and other social partners like the Global Fund, differed from the British government. They've helped us, together with the trade unions, to actually say, how do you reform the processes? And that's why you have the stakeholder grouping, which is linked behind a common vision of delivery of services to current and ex-mine workers and a better life for the mine workers who help to build the economy of our country. The Global Fund, the provincial and neighboring country governments, particularly the Eastern Cape provincial government, Mpumalanga, Free State, in fact, all provincial governments, we've been working closely with Department of Mineral Resources Deputy Minister Oliphant,
in terms of outreach activities. But particularly in the Eastern Cape, the Eastern Cape Provincial Government under the Office of the Premier has come forward and helped a lot, particularly with work for ex-mine workers in the Eastern Cape. The Global Fund for AIDS, TB and Malaria has a $30 million grant for the neighboring countries, and they've said they are setting up 11 one-stop service centers along the model of the Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital at Carltonville, and the 11 are going into 8 countries, neighboring countries. But seven of the 11, 2 are going into Lesotho, 2 into Mozambique, 2 into Swaziland, and 1 into Botswana. And they will be operational as of June this year, these one-stop service centers for ex-mine workers, which is going to help to enhance service delivery. Stratikulu in Swaziland and Mafeteng in Lesotho have already been opened, and we have continued with accreditation visits there. The alignment of compensation systems I'll talk more about in a minute. So just on performance outputs, the policy and legislative changes, initially we were looking at integrating with the Department of Labor, and we had a series of activities over the last year led by Deputy Minister Godfrey Oliphant in terms of integrating Kwaida and Odemwa, because the key area was in line with international prescripts that the Department of Labor ought to be involved with social protection, including compensation. The problem was that it would have meant dealing with 2 portfolio committees. You'd have to amend Kwaida, the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Disease Act, and you'll also have to amend Odemwa as the giving department and Kwaida as the receiving department. So with the result, we made a presentation to Minister Oliphant in the Department of Labor and Minister Motsoaledi in the Department of Health with a large group, since many of the people in this audience have also been part of that process of the integration and the task teams and the steering committees. In October last year, we made a presentation. And at that stage, the Department of Labor felt that we still have a lot of legacy problems to deal with, baggage. We haven't done annual financial reports yet. The actuarial valuation report at that stage was not ready. So there was a feeling that clean up the problem, and then we can talk at that stage. So given those issues, we've looked at a model called the Clean Break Principle. The Clean Break Principle is saying that the Department of Health will continue to look after ex-mine workers under Odemwa, and the current 400,000 mine workers in the 246 control mines, 252 control mines. But any new worker joining the mining sector, mines and work sector, as of a date, in terms of promulgation of legislation, will go in under Kwaida. So that's the clean break principle, and there's some principles around the clean break principle, which is very important for this committee. And at a later stage, we'll come back to you about that process with the amendments. Performance outputs administratively, we presented to you all last year about the database. We now have a sizable database of 400,000 plus the 200,000 CCOD, so 600,000. It is the state-of-the-art database, and the presidency through the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation have been very keen on working with us on the FSB, Unclaimed Benefits, Financial Services Board with Unclaimed Benefits, Pension and Provident Funds. Members might recall that there's 30 billion rand sitting in unclaimed benefits beyond things like our compensation funds, pension funds, provident funds, etc. Of course, that is regulated by a completely different sector in the industry. And through our work in unclaimed benefits in this compensation fund, we've managed to begin to influence processes under Minister Adebe's office, which has begun to start reaching out through FSB. Certifications, I'll show you the numbers in a minute. We've done major track and trace. We spent 8 selected districts in the Eastern Cape we went to last year, and 1 district each in Botswana, Mozambique, Lesotho, and Swaziland. And it was just a tremendous route where neighboring country governments for the first time saw South Africa coming to the party and not saying that we're a dumping ground. And we did some tremendous work in terms of track and trace. Payments have gone up, and then we've also had a levy workshop. So this shows you, Chairperson and Honorable Members, the certifications per month. And this is the work that Dr. Michali does. With the 24 doctors from the mining industry who have come on board, in terms of supporting us, and you can see the blue lines represent, so we've now hit 20,000 per annum, as opposed to previously where we were doing 5,000 per annum. If you see the two lines, so we're now doing 20,000 certifications per annum compared to 5,000 in the previous financial year. This is an important technical process where a panel of medical doctors looks at the chest x-ray, the lung functions, and determines whether you've got a compensable lung disease. So this shows you that with the support of the trade unions and the employer groups, the Chamber of Mines, how we've managed to move this process forward, together now with the one-stop service centers kicking in. Payments per month, we're now hitting approximately 6,000 over this annual period, over this 1 year period, compared to previously 2,000. So we've actually tripled our payments, and you know we've got a massive backlog of 100,000 unclaimed benefits. So we're beginning to show you that the foundation that we've now set over the last 3 years, like the database, the track and trace programs that we're now pushing forward with the support of the trade unions and the mining companies and the social partners. This shows you, colleagues, what we've actually paid out over the last year, over a period of time. I do apologize for the figures being small, but over the last year we paid out 5,296 up to March 2017, 203 million rands. In the previous period, it was the equivalent of 80 million rand that we paid out. So we've really now moved ahead almost like 200% in terms of moving forward in terms of this process. And Mr. Meshack Masungani is our Director of Finance, who works long hours to just ensure that we're paying the right people, etc., who is sitting on my right. Of course, Mr. Malotsi, the Deputy Commissioner, is busy with the revenue collections from the mining companies. This shows you the data because we are tracking now SADC countries. IP Capital, who is the seconded company that's on my far left, that's tracking all of these. This is SADC in my left hand side, it'll be your left as well, which is showing that approximately 75 million went into the SADC countries, Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, and Swaziland. Eastern Cape got 50 million, Free State 22 million, etc. So this is showing you how the cash transfers are taking place to ex-mine workers as a result of our outreach activities. The database, I've shown you this before, but it's just showing you the fact that in terms of the 600,000 files, we now have a solid process. We demonstrated that to you last year, and we'd welcome parliamentarians to your constituency offices having access to this database and working with us in terms of frontline service delivery. So Ms. Pardesi, who works through the parliamentary office, can work with you through constituency offices, and you just sign a non-disclosure agreement with us, and then we'll give you access to the database, which tells you clearly if a mine worker comes into your constituency office, you can actually see whether they're due for a medical examination or whether they have an outstanding claim. So this is a very interesting process now that we've developed, and this is the processes around it, the master database, etc. By June this year, we're expecting to have the 400,000 current mine workers. Remember, the big problem we had was historically, because of migrant labor, contract work, etc., we never had a database of the workers. So we've now created this database of 600,000. And as of June this year, the current 400,000 mine workers will also be in our database. So we'll have a comprehensive database of 1 million workers. And we are constantly, with this ex-mine worker process, with the outreach activities with Deputy Minister Godfrey Oliphant, we are reaching out, and we reached out to 60,000 ex-mine workers last year. Of course, we only found 10,000 on our database. The default position is that they probably are covered under COIDA, the Department of Labor, but that's something that we are now teasing out as we clean up that database of the 60,000 people who said they are ex-mine workers, but they are not sitting on our database. So performance outputs, I'm glad to announce, Chairperson. Remember, the strat plan and the APP was at the end of December, because we had to meet the March deadline of submission to your committee. So as of now, the actual valuation has been signed off by the Auditor General and approved by the Auditor General. Of course, we are preparing the 10-11 and Level 12 financial statements, incorporating the actual valuation report, which has also been signed off by the Auditor General, and that's in the process now. We just concluded that 2 weeks ago. There was holidays in between, but we are now preparing the financial reports. Remember, the backlog, we've not presented annual financial reports to this committee since 2009-2010. So we have this backlog that we are cleaning up now as we go forward. We have the innovation and service delivery. We now have a website, which you can look at how to download the forms, how to follow this process. We have a logistics coordinating center at the Chamber of Mines. The Chamber of Mines has taken this on to pull together how documents come in and pull these things together. And is also funding the logistics coordinating center together with the gold mining companies. We have a call center. It's a share call, unfortunately. So we don't have an 0800 number, and unfortunately it cannot be accessed from outside South Africa. We are working towards how we can create a call center that can cover SADC as opposed to just South Africans, where people can then call, find out about the claims, etc. We've done mapping. I demonstrated a bit of the mapping last year, and then I pointed out the fixed and mobile services, which I showed you. So this was Swaziland in November last year. where there was a SADC Ministers of Health meeting, and this was the outreach activity which I demonstrated very briefly to you when I showed you Matatil when we'd gone in June last year, in July. So in 6 months we also finally got to Swaziland. Here's our truck with the mobile x-ray unit and the lung function machine. The vital signs are being done by the nurses and the outreach activities that are being supported. In terms of mapping, we're working with TomTom, the GPS group. This is funded through the Global Fund. And this tells you where labor sending areas. This is mainly covering at this moment Mozambique, Swaziland and Lesotho. It tells you the towns and districts where the mine workers come from and how which routes they travel. So you can actually look for service planning and the inputs around this. TomTom also has a very good innovation where through cell phone, they can track, they've mapped out every household, including huts, urban dwellings, mountains, rivers. They can track a cell phone signal to within a meter of a hut. Now that's going to be very useful for our tracking process as we go forward in terms of the process. We then did the reverse flow. Remember I told you we've got 1.2 billion in unclaimed benefits. So if we find all X number of people in the Eastern Cape and pay them their benefits, they will get approximately, it's 430 million rand. Lesotho is around 250 million, Mozambique is around 150 million, etc. We can map this flow of money down to district level, or a Bazana, Flagstaff, Matatil. So this can help with macroeconomic planning. So that's why the presidency was very interested in these tools, because if you have those other unclaimed benefits in the pension funds, provident funds, then ultimately a place like Bazana might actually be getting back 200 to 300 million rand in unclaimed benefits. And that helps then with local economic development, etc. So these are some of the things that we've been sharing across us. So in governance, we've got the advisory committee, the audit and risk committee. The risk committee is chaired by the chief inspector of mines. It's an anomaly in the act where there's a reporting structure to the Minister of Health, but the structure that reports to the Minister of Health is not appointed by the Minister of Health. Hence we've had a non-functional risk committee because, of course, when the chief inspector is called by his minister, you know, he's going to go through that process. And this has been very problematic for us because as a result of the risk committee not functioning, we've had problems around health risks in mines. We do have health inspectors, but they have to report into the risk committee, and this creates problems for us for this issue around control mines and works. The audit and risk committee is functional. The advisory committee has been functional. And many of the members in this August gathering are members of the advisory committee who support us from the trade unions and the Chamber of Mines. We've been quite active in the Interministerial Committee with Minister Motsoaledi under the leadership of Minister Adebe on distressed mining communities and labour selling areas, and we've provided some of the major technical tools on improving the lives and livelihoods of health workers, including social determinants of health like housing, you know, the single sex hostels, etc., overcrowding, health and safety issues with departmental resources, etc. And then we've also made major inputs on TB and silicosis, etc., into the SADC processes through our Minister of Health. So the organizational environment, we do not have a director of the Medical Bureau right now because this is a seconded process, but we're in the final stages. We've got final clearance from the Department of Public Service and Administration last month, and we are finalizing now Dr. Mitchali's appointment as the director of the Medical Bureau. Currently, she sits as the head of the Certification Committee as a special post. So we're hoping, hopefully with Dr. Pillay being here, that this process will be finalized by the 1st of June in terms of her coming as the director. Yes, we still have a problem with the lack of specialists. Council for Medical Schemes are here. They have the same problems. And we have a whole lot of seconded colleagues that are helping us with this process in health, finance, legal, etc. We've had major problems with work stoppages at the MBOD CCOD, which led to some of the problems. Hopefully that's over, but these are some of the difficulties we've had in terms of opposition to many of the reforms we are trying to do, like the one-stop service delivery issues, extended services, etc. There are still problems around physical facilities and equipment. We've had an x-ray machine that's not been functional for some time now. We've had to get a mobile unit to come in. So that's the point I made originally about a service delivery unit in the National Department of Health, because at times colleagues in Pretoria may not understand all our nuances in terms of it being a frontline service delivery unit, like an x-ray machine that's not functional and a mine worker coming in and needing an x-ray. The information technology system is outdated. It had long gone by its sell-by date, and we need about 20 million rand to fix that process. Hopefully between Dr. Pillay and Mr. Ian van der Merwe and the DG, they've brought us higher up on the agenda in terms of this. We lose 22 professional technical service officers. I think you know that the Director General has a special program funded by the European Union for Professional Technical Service Officers. That program came to an end as of last week, and we've lost then these 22 within our total gambit of about 100 staff, and we've had a nominal increase in our budget. So what are we trying to do in the next amended strategic plan? Because we've had changes in staff, we don't have enough budget, especially the policy and legislative changes, and I've mentioned clearly the issue around the clean break principle, where we're looking at a two-step processes of creating new structures within Odemwa that can meet the service delivery needs of Odemwa. But the first step is this issue around the all new mine workers in mines and works joining the mines and works sector as of a certain date will be under QIDA. So it's basically a one-liner that we'll have to engage with your committee and the portfolio committee on labor. But then it means there's no baggage. There's no issues of moving the actuarial valuation fund because a new worker starting then starts with his new set of problems and issues in the industry as opposed, and will also enjoy the superior benefits of the QIDA fund. On the committees are functional, except for the risk committee. We still don't have a way around that, but we also want to have the legislative changes in terms of the second phase of Odemwa in terms of governance and management issues, the committee structures, and a service delivery instrument that we can take. And one of the issues that we're looking at is whether we should not be thinking radically about a public agency model or a model in terms of under the FSB, Financial Services Board. So we want to re-explore this whole issue because social protection funds by their nature are under the control of bosses, mine owners who contribute, and trade unions. So they actually manage this. Generally, the regulator provides a role in making sure there's responsible activities. But in most countries, these are run by trade unions and the mine owners in terms of this process. So we want to think a bit of that, similar to pension funds and provident funds, about how we can deal with this. But we'll get back to you later this year in terms of those legislative changes. The service delivery, there are some points around that, and then the backlogs in claims management and revenue collection. So Chair, I'm going to quickly skip over this because this is in your document. It's written very finely, so I do apologize because we had to fix it in an A4 page. But we've already had consultative meetings, and by far and large, within the advisory committee and our audit and risk committee and the wider stakeholder forums that we've seen, we're more close to this process about the clean break principle and then changes to Odemwa. So, and we will have a further consultative meeting later this year and then come to you with those processes. On governance and management, we've been up to date with those four meetings. In fact, we've had some additional meetings. And our previous baseline, this is now the previous 2015-16 strategic plan, so we've amended that now to four meetings of the advisory committee from originally two. The one-stop service centers, Amtata and Carltonville, and glad to note that Beggarspot and Kuruman, we've in the final stage of awarding the tender. It's gone through all the procurement issues. This was delayed quite a bit in terms of Beggarspot and Kuruman, but those will be the four fixed facilities in South Africa. And then I talked about Botswana, Lesotho, Mozambique, and Swaziland having funding from the Global Fund for seven one-stop facilities. We are exploring mobile facilities because even for people to come from Flagstaff or Bizana or Matatil to Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital is far, 200 to 300 kilometers. The mobile units are the route we want to go, and thanks to Adam Lechela and Vince Wooters, who are both here, they stimulated the whole discussion around mobile units. And work is progressing on that. So the database I talked about, originally we had 200,000 files. By June this year we'll have 1 million files. And it's an electronic database, and we demonstrated last year to you, and we'll make it available to you via your constituency offices. So there's a whole issue around the legacy issues around the unpaid claims, the 100,000, and we've amended that because of constraints to 30% paid by 2019-20. New claims. So new claims that are coming in, because the big issue on new claims is about bank accounts. Bank accounts go stale within 3 months. And if you recall, I showed you all how we went to the field with Absa Bank, because we opened bank accounts while we're in the field so that workers don't have to go around, or beneficiaries, to have to go to a town and then open a bank account and fee cutting and all of that. So we provide a full one-stop service at the mobile center. So what we are hoping is that we'll pay 50% within 3 months, and that's our target. So month one is the registration of the claim, month two is the certification of the claim under Dr. Machali, and month three is the payment of the claim if they have a compensable illness under Mr. Masangani. Revenue collection, Mr. Molotti has a special team that's working on increasing our revenue collection of the control mines. We've also had a very good levy workshop based on the actuarial valuation. We will continue with that levy workshop next week on the 11th. But we're getting a sense of buy-in. The social conscience of the mining industry has been pricked. We're getting a total sense of buy-in, as you see by the members that have come today. And I think we will achieve some of these issues. The 20% that are not paying, some of them are related to issues around the Government Gazette. They want source documents. So we actually have a team that's looking at the source documents of the Government Gazette. Like we did not have a register of the claimants, we did not have a comprehensive register of the control mines and works with source documents. So that's something that we are resolving right now and pulling together. The actuarial valuation was not done in 2015-16. We now have an approved actuarial valuation report by the Auditor General of South Africa, which will be presented to your portfolio committee within the next month as we prepare the documents for you for the 10-11 and 11-12 financial years. Annual reports and financial statements, we're hoping to hit the target in 2019-20, but Chair, if all goes well, we should be able to complete the full financial statements by this close of this financial year in terms of 31st March next year. That means we should be up to date with the 16-17 financial statements this thing. But let's hold water on that. We still need the support of the mining companies, etc. But this is very important in terms of that clean break principle and some of the amendments we want to make. But the Department of Labor says, sort out the problems before you decide to talk to us. So we are under this. So in terms of indicators, it's self-standing in terms of what are some of the indicators. Treasury wanted us to put the indicators in as well, so hence we put the numbers in about what we're trying to do. And in terms of voted funds, this is what comes through the budget of the Department of Health. So this is not in our budget because the compensation fund has a separate line item with separate bank accounts. But you can see we've had a nominal increase, and essentially in terms of the MTF, it's a negative growth for us. In terms of the bulk of the funds ultimately will land up with compensation of employees. We've also had some declines in terms of that. The goods and services and transfers are mainly related to the pensions, mainly to white mine workers. This is an historical legacy issue in the state account. Goods and services are mainly related to what we pay for the benefit medical examinations. So it's a flawed model where the levy only covers income protection in this fund as opposed to the levy in other funds. In the QIDA fund or RAND mutual fund, the levy covers the cost of administration, the cost of healthcare, and the cost of income protection. In our case, government has to pay for benefit medical examinations, etc. And this is a flawed model that we talked to you all about previously. So, in conclusion on the strat plan, inadequacy of voted funds, the need we've costed, and we've just done a comprehensive exercise funded through the mining companies, through Deloitte. There's also the Public Research Institute where the Department of the Presidency has got involved in helping us. PARI, I can't remember what it really stands for. Public Affairs Research Institute, which is doing work on governance models, etc. The need is for about 200 million rand per annum to deliver this extensive service in neighboring countries, labor sending areas, rural areas of our country where the bulk of our people are, as well as compared to the 60 million that we get per annum. So we're working then with the partners to deliver this. We will have the register of control mines by hopefully June, July this year, so that's the other register that we'll have sorted out, and we are deliberating on new models for governance, management, and service delivery. Risk management, the policy and legislative framework is restrictive, and there are issues around that. We had adverse audit findings in governance and management, which then led to the fact of no oversight, and we've now cleared all of that. The one-stop service delivery, if we don't sustain them, through some new models, and we're suggesting a model of what's called a care fund that we are discussing with the industry about helping to pay for the cost of benefit medical examinations, etc. And we're also looking at some issues about providing oxygen. Many of the diseases that these workers suffer from are not curable other than TB. So oxygen plays an important role in helping them with a better chest, etc., and ionizer prophylaxis. And then management, inability, sustainability of the fund. That's why you need annual actuarial valuation reports. So we've concluded the last one as of 31st March 2016. That has just been approved by the Auditor General. And we will now start the new one as of 31st March 2017. So updated actuarial valuation reports and annual financial statements. So Chair, that's the strat plan in general, which is amended, partly because of some problems around financing and resource considerations. And with your permission, Chair, I'll go on to the APP, if it's okay with the members.
I think it's okay, members. You may continue.
So the APP overlaps with part of the performance because we had to take in some of the performance environment, the organization environment is covered partly in the strat plan. So highlights for 2016-17, approval of the actuarial valuation report, sign off on the annual reports and financial statements by the Auditor General, and Chair, we moved from a disclaimer. We had 7 years of disclaimers up to the 2010-11 financial year. We've now moved to a qualification. And the qualification is on revenue. Hence, if we sort out the receivables and revenue, the register of control mines, we might be able to move to a matter of emphasis. And I think thanks to all the partners and the management team who have delivered this agenda that we've actually moved now to a qualification. And the qualification is mainly, there were some other minor issues, but the qualification was mainly on the revenue side. And of course, we'll present that to you all later this year. We've consulted on the policy and legal reform to Odemwa. We have a model for setting up a compensation authority, and we're discussing then where should the compensation authority sit. Should it sit in the Department of Health? Should it sit in the Financial Services Board? What models are there? And we'd like inputs from your committee, because last time Dr. Wilmot James told us about short-termism and long-termism. And we remembered that in terms of his work, I think he did for Sanlam, and he mentioned this work. So we took those things into account, and I think other members who are medical practitioners here might also advise us, because we think there's a very archaic system of chest x-rays, lung function tests, etc., and a voluminous process. As we got to the ground in Lesotho, a beneficiary who was a widow in Lesotho has to go through four layers of traditional leaders before she can get a signed off form which says she is the widow. Now, when you start beginning to look at these issues, that each time she's paying for that service, she pays 100, the equivalent, 100 rand equivalent, for a fingerprint to be stamped by the police in Lesotho. Now, these are the difficulties that face our people on the ground. Of course, many of our documents in Mozambique have to be translated either into Shangaan or Portuguese, and we on our side can't read those documents. So these are some of the issues that we have to face in terms of going forward in terms of this. So there are certain issues with the compensation authority that we think are very important, and we want to discuss that further with you in terms of the clean break means that new workers go to Quaidam, and ex-mine workers and current mine workers, the 400,000, remain within this framework of a compensation authority would improve service delivery, where we've got the models that we've experimented on over the last 2 years. The business processing, I give you the examples of that and what we've done. The other breakthrough we made, Chair, and this shows you the strength of the IMC. The IMC under Minister Adebe took a decision last year in October that I should then engage with TEBA. Remember, our people had to pay 90 rands for the record of service from TEBA to show that they work in the mining industry. And this was a major impediment to us. The IMC took a decision that we will go to court. And if TEBA doesn't relinquish, so they said, go and talk to NUM, the National Union of Mine Workers, who have some history with TEBA, and go and talk to the Chamber of Mines. So I started with the Chamber of Mines because the NUM says they don't have money. So I went and spoke to the Chamber of Mines, and the Chamber of Mines agreed in October last year to pay for the records of service. A major breakthrough for our people, again, in terms of this process of working through the records. And Ms. Padesi is managing that process now directly with TEBA, Chamber of Mines, and us for the records of service. And that's why the database is going to be important for the future, because the records of service are needed for unemployment insurance funds, etc. So now our database is being made available to other colleagues that need records of service free of charge. And we've rearranged the levy table. The levy table for revenue had gold in the middle, chrome at the top. So chrome was actually cross-subsidizing gold in inverted commas. So because we've got a proper actuarial valuation now that's been passed by the Auditor General, accepted by the Advisory Committee, accepted by the Audit and Risk Committee, we now have a levy table that's reflecting claims and revenue, and it's 80-80. 80% of the claims come from the gold mining industry, 80% of the revenue comes from the gold mining industry, and it's fascinating, but I won't present the data to you today. We will come back to you about that. But gold now goes to the top of the levy table, and the others come to the bottom. So, and we'll finalize that within the next week, then get it through the advisory committee and then gazette the new league tables. Later on, depending on the work that we'll do with your committee, we are then bringing in a levy that will cover the costs of administration and the cost of healthcare. Remember I talked about the care fund, etc., which currently the state is covering, but we're saying it must come in as part of the levy. So these are discussions we're having about this process. And it's surprising, in a sense, just to say to this honorable committee that the levy is actually changed positively for the industry. So in fact, it'll be a reduced levy as opposed to a raised levy. So we hope that the pain won't be as bad as it is, and the companies will come to the party in terms of this process. So the focus areas for 2017-18 will be the amendments, the increased use of the decentralized one-stop service facilities, including mobile units, closer to our people, deliver services to our people as opposed to our people coming to Braamfontein. We're going to have some decreased certifications and payments, but we're hoping if we can get additional funding, we can pull that off. We'll have an updated actuarial valuation report as of 31st March, and we want to continue with producing our annual financial statements and inputs. So the backlogs, we have 300,000 benefit medical examinations to be done. The average cost of a benefit medical examination, chest x-ray, lung function, and a clinical evaluation is 1,000 Rand. 1,200 Rand in Shoshai, 1,000 Rand in Flagstaff, 800 Rand in Carltonville because of support services that we have provided. So you average it out at 1,000, that's 300 million Rand that we have to find to do benefit medical examinations. And many of these would be a baseline benefit medical examination because in the past, our people could not access these services unless they came to Johannesburg. We have a backlog of 20 million for the information technology system. We're in discussions with the National Department of Health about supporting that. We talked about the unclaimed paid claims before. We're trying to increase that process. Personnel, fortunately, we do have support personnel that have been seconded. Not enough. Buildings and equipment are still a problem in Braamfontein, and we've had a nominal increase in voted funds. So I'm just going to, if we have questions on the budget later on, the Deputy Commissioner and IP Capital will assist with that. But this is the compensation fund budget for the MTEF period. Then it shows you the administration costs are mainly the costs of the payments we make for the actuarial valuation report. So it was quite a large sum of money that we had to set aside for the actuarial valuation report. The pensioners is from the state account. This is for previously white mine workers who continue to have a pension. You can see over time, you know, that will there are some increases in line with increases in state pensions in the Department of Social Development. The ex-mine workers program is the funding that covers the silicosis, pneumoconiosis, obstructive airways disease, etc. The TB program that covers loss of earnings for TB. And the Eastern Cape project is now declining. This was a special fund set up by the former Transkei government and the Chamber of Mines. And we've now more or less is declining as we kick in the new programs in terms of this process. Financial performance in terms of the process, so total revenue, as you saw, was 403 million, and it's been, the Deputy Commissioner has done a tremendous amount of work in, as I said, and there's also the social consensus of the mining companies to pay. So we've increased our revenues. Of course, remember we did make an increase in the levy calculations in the 10-11 financial year, but this is now continuing the process. We've not increased the levy since then. In fact, with the new levy tables, there'll be a decline in some of that processes and the expenses. So technically, we are technically solvent in many instances in terms of the process. And the overall financial process is that currently we have 3.4 billion Rand in the bank account. Of course, we've got to get audited financial statements. Hopefully the Deputy Commissioner who runs the bank accounts with Mr. Masangani hasn't left a hole there when we finally go looking for the bank account. But because remember, we don't have audited financial statements up to date, but we hope to complete that by the end of this year. But I'm told there's 3.4 billion currently in the account. Okay, and these are the amounts that we are collecting over the next couple of years in terms of revenue and surpluses, and then ultimately over the MTEF period 2019-20, we should have 4 billion in the bank account in terms of the process as we go forward. Noting that this will change based on the actuarial valuation reports. So, like for example, we now know that we can decrease the levy. Of course, we're in discussion. So these were estimates because we had estimated this not based on the current true financial position, but as we improve on the true financial position, we'll improve this. So the actuarial valuation, Deloitte was appointed for 3 years through a tender process. So last year was the first year of the appointment, so they'll be with us for another 2 years. I pointed out that the valuation report was done in terms of the TB claims, first degree and second degree. It's very, very solid science around this process that we spent time on. We've done tremendous data verification under the IP capital process funded by the Chamber of Mines and the Gold Working Group. And the actuarial valuation report has been determined at 60%, 75%, 90%, and 100%. 100% is when we close the fund. But at this moment in time, the Auditors Committee, the Auditor General, and the Advisory Committee has accepted a 75% claim. That means we'll find 75% of the unpaid claims and pay them, and we are technically solvent around 3.4 billion rand. So we have sufficient funds to meet that at 75%. At 100%, we need an additional 1 billion rand. But I'm told the norm, and maybe Dr. James knows more about these things, the norm apparently for the insurance industry is around 60% of unpaid claims. But either way, we've accepted it, and we'll be presenting that to Portio. Also, we've covered a benefit increase. So we've never increased benefits since 2009. With a 20% increase in benefits, we are 20% solvent. So, I mean, we are technically solvent as well. And I pointed out about the new levy table, and then the new valuation report will be prepared. Annual reports, I talked about earlier on. We have a disclaimer on the 2010-11. We were still in the dark areas. 2011-12, we went to a qualification on revenue. We are finalizing the reports within the next month to presentations to your committee. And then you'll probably have a hearing with us in terms of this process. We have finalized the 12-13 annual report, and it will be submitted in June. And we're busy preparing the 13-14. So thus, Chair, we feel that by the end of this financial year, we'll have come up to date with 14-15, 15-16, 16-17. So we think we'll be online in terms of this process. So I'm going to skip this because this covers our output figures over the 17-18 financial year and the performance data that we are targeting and where we're going. We're providing, we currently piloting an online submission of claims, including digital x-rays. The online submission is being done by XDS EOS, funded by the TIMS grant. They've already created an online support from Mafeteng in Maseru to Braamfontein, and they also have started in Carletonville. So we're going to look at online submission of claims as opposed to manual paper going across the board. And ultimately, these will be extended to Amtata, et cetera, in terms of the process. There's an internal tracking system that we are setting up on claimant files. We're still having some battles with scanners. Hopefully, Ms. Padesi will finalize that, and the issue about tracking internally when documents come to us. Remember, month one registration, month two certification, and month three should be payment. So we want to do that process. Control mines and works, hopefully with the good news coming to the mining industry, we'll increase the target of 70%. The overall target for the MTF is 80%, but we've got 70% now. And then the actuarial valuation reports and the annual reports. So here are the indicators for the benefit medical examinations. Shows you performance that we did, unaudited performance. But we were plus 21% last year, plus 101% on certified claims, and I gave you some of the figures earlier on, plus 60% in payments, etc., etc. So resource considerations, I pointed out to you before that we've got some problems with resources. And then in conclusion, just to acknowledge the members that are here, to acknowledge the presidency for support and working with mineral resources. Because remember, Minister pointed out prevention. We should not be having a job to do in this fund. We should be preventing through noise control measures, dust control measures, improved health and safety in the mining industry. And we want to influence that process with the Chamber of Mines and the trade unions in that sector. Provincial and neighboring country governments have come to the party, including the SADC, within Dr. Anbin's section, public entities, governments has helped us. The Chamber of Mines, the Gold Working Group, the trade unions, AMCU, NUMSA, Solidarity, and UASA. Unfortunately, AMCU and UASA are not on my advisory committee, those are some of the amendments we want to make because they play an important role as well. But AMCU, all five trade unions have been involved with us on the restructuring and the reforms and the amendments and the consultative workshops, etc. We work very closely with ex-mine worker associations and NGOs, social partners, National Institute for Occupational Health, which does our pathology reports, the Mine Health and Safety Council, Rand Mutual and TEBA, and of course, acknowledging the staff. So thanks, Chair, in terms of for members. I know it's been a long day, but we've dealt with two aspects, trust plans and the APP. Thanks to the honorable members.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Honorable members, the presentation from SSOT and it takes Honorable James, Honorable Maisel, Honorable Ndaba, Honorable Tibekwai, in that order.
Well, first of all, congratulations. That was a really excellent report, and between what we heard the last time and what we heard today, there's been massive change. And so I think that you ought to be complimented for that by any measure. Clearly, there's ways to go still to get you running at 100% efficiency and capacity, but I think the strides have been fabulous, so congratulations. I had a couple of questions, and the first has to do with the fact that there will be some funds that will never be claimed, right? So you just simply can't find the people, and you clearly would have to make all the effort you possibly can in order to find people, but they will just never be found. But you can't, you can get close to estimating what the amount would be, but you really can't be accurate about it. So I think the actuarial side of it has to be maximized, but you will have a and that will accumulate, and so you will have a reserve fund accumulating in the course of time, and the question is, what do you do with that? And so smart economists would say you need to invest it in some way so that you can generate interest, and so and that interest you can pour back into the system. So that's the one issue. The other has to do with what the you might have mentioned it, but some detail on the regional flow in sub-Saharan Africa and how far back you go, because I mean mine workers came all the way from Malawi at some point, and there was a large, about 20,000 Zimbabwean workers in the 1970s, and they were phased out for very interesting reasons. Actually, is because their level of literacy was too high in that community. So, but just to get a sense of the regional reach of your payouts, and I presume one of your one-stop shops are in the region as well. Be nice to see them. Be nice for the committee to see them.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I want to comment, COD, Chair, with the improvements that they've made. They know we've been fighting COD for a very long time. At least they have shown that with all the advice that we gave to them, they've acted and at least we need to appreciate the little that they've done. We need to commend them. But I think, Chair, with regards to the submission of their reports and financial statements to the Auditor General, Chair, I think it's been long that these were outstanding, but I think they've tried their level best. Maybe not today, but in the next meeting that we'll have with them, they can come and share with us what are the findings from the reports that they have submitted to the Auditor General, and share with us even all the reports, you know, that they will go and submit to the Auditor General, and just share with us all the findings. And also they must also give us a plan, Chair, on how are they going to redress the findings in terms of the Auditor General findings. But congratulations, at least you have moved. I think one other thing, Chair, that is impressing me is the one-stop shop that they are going to establish in Kimberley, Limpopo, and Kuruman. Yeah, it's for the benefit of our people, because they've been traveling for a long time, going to Gauteng, coming to Gauteng to make those claims and so on and so on. But I was happy that you said you have already started with the procurement things. What we'll request you to do is that maybe if you can just try and move faster so that you cannot delay this process. What is the other one? But I'm also interested in with the reaching out program. I see here you're saying we have had these programs in some of the provinces. But one is interested on and which provinces have you done it, and how is the impact And maybe what models are you using? Whether you are using, you are going to the malls or to the radios, talking with their own language and so on and so on. But one is interested in knowing how do you make them, how do you do them? Because sometimes, no, we can go and do an outreach program. When you get there, they'll find you speaking with our people English, you know. And, you know, our people, it's better if you talk in their language so that at least they can understand. But also, even with the initiative of you working with us in our constituencies, getting those lists, also, it's going to help us. But I'm not sure how we're going to get it. Whether you are going to ask us our office numbers or how are we going to get it? Because for me, that's very much important. That's why we are here as public representatives, so that we can ensure that our people, they know what is due to them and where must they go for all the testing for TBs and whatsoever, and who is responsible for the payment. I think that's most important. And with the Durban issue, if you remember, we've been asking you several times and fighting that, but where are the unions? What are they doing? Where is NUM? Why are they not fighting for our people to get the data and so on and so on and so on? But thank you very much for that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honourable Maisel.
Thank you for a job well done under these circumstances. Did you ever think of changing your name somewhere in the future, making it Prevention of Occupational Diseases, instead of what you are now? You see, the health practitioner's duty is to prevent ill health and bring about good health. But now, it's not your fault that people killed or maimed people or actually made them die of silicosis and all the others. You are merely trying to help those that are alive. Those who are dead are dead. You can't help them. But have you ever been to Beggarsford? I mean, in the evening, you can't drive without fog lights, and that's dust. And it doesn't choose whether you are a minor or a child or a housewife or anybody. And all those people, for sure, their life expectancy is really very much compromised. They can't live longer than 50. And we all know this. Maybe when they are coughing blood or their lungs out, you come in and try and compensate them, right? Please. That's what your job is, compensate them when they are finished. And it's weird, isn't it? I mean, here we are. Okay, fine, we are doing something good. It's laudable, it's commendable to do what we are doing now for those who are still alive. But can we, in the process, try and see whether we can prevent the others from going through the same process? And actually make the mine owners to prevent, at all costs, people from getting silicosis and all sorts of things for now. No, I mean, if it needs an act of parliament to do that, maybe we should try and do it. Because what's the point? No? People will always go to the mines. That's where they get jobs. But that's where they get killed, I mean, willingly, in large numbers. Okay, very few escape and go home and enjoy their pension in good health, right? Very few. There is the work. Can we do something in somewhere along the line, gravitate towards prevention rather than curing or compensating those that are dead? So, yeah, it is scary. But you see, at Pench Mine, they were mining asbestos. They just left the dumps there. Nothing is happening. In Kuruman as well, I think. They just left the dumps there. And that just spells cancer, right? But you know, we are not interested in that. We are interested in them when they have cancer in the mind. Then we can compensate their relatives because they will be dead, right? Is it not something that we should change our mindset and try to think maybe differently from what we are made to think now? We are thinking in a different direction, but we can change and think maybe parallel or in a different way, instead of just say accepting as it is, as a given, that this is what we are supposed to do, this is what we are going to do, come rain, come storm, or what, come sunshine, this is what we are going to do. It's scary, right, to do that type of thing at this level. Maybe we should gradually try to change the mindset and see what can be done to sort of prevent this type of calamity from happening, maybe at a large scale like it is. No? Those people in Beaconsfield now, children, women, and everybody who, whether you work in the mine or you are visiting or you are just staying there, you get contaminated with that dust. It doesn't choose. Why can't we force the mine people, owners, to remove them and put them somewhere far from this danger, while they still have the money to move them? Otherwise, when the ore is exhausted, they close the mine and go away. Those people will die on their own. There will be nobody to compensate them, right? Nobody to tax. Maybe let's think out of the box a little bit and say, this one, let's help them. Let's get them out of it. You know, it's a corridor, that place, where the dust can't escape. And there's lots of it, plenty of it. And there's lots of riches. I think it's the richest area, or produces more riches in South Africa than how Joburg used to produce with gold. But what happened? There's no more gold. It just mine dumps and dust. The same thing is happening there. And we are watching. I don't want to go further than I had a lot of questions, but I think maybe I should just stop here before I move.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I would like to draw your attention to slide 20 that deals with the service delivery, which I think service delivery plays an important role and should be prioritized so as to prevent the backlogs in claims. Because if we compare the information in the slide 22, my worrying factor is about the unpaid claims as at the 31st of March 2015. I know for sure that in the second presentation of an annual performance plan, there is an inclusion of 2016-2017 where 10%, only 10% is bracketed as the claims that will be paid, and also in comparison to the target 2019 to 2020, which caters only for 30% to be paid. My question is, what about the remaining 70%? I mean, if it was 70% accommodated in the years 2016, 2017, 2019 to 2020, that would be at least better. And at the same time, we also have to compare it with the new claims, the percentages of new claims, which is running very, very, very fast. As at the 1st of April 2017, and they are even paid within 3 months. And for 2019 or whatever, it's 50% to be paid. My question is a problem. How would you, what are the steps that you would take at least to cover the 70%? And the second one, I only have two questions. The second one is based on slide 27. That deals with governance and management, and it is also a connection. It's also related to service delivery, because you talk of consequences, no oversight on activities of CCOD, and the oversight plays an important role. And that's why we have under one-stop service center, no uptake of services and no funds for recurrence. Lack of trust by ex-workers. I mean, it's a problem to say if ex-workers do not trust the people who are working at one-stop service centers, where will they have the freedom, you know, of going to execute their claims, and which also leads us to ineffective management, because the last line says inability to meet liabilities and pay benefits. If you can work around that to make just a bit of improvement, because all this brings us back to a successful service delivery. We deliver to the people who are working in the mines. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. Let me also join colleagues to commend the work that and the efforts that you've put thus far into the work of this, and then also indicate that it's very encouraging to see business, labor, government coming together in the manner that we have pulled everybody together. And I'm sure we are going to pull this thing and be successful at the end. Well, starting from the outreach program, I just want to raise the experience that we encountered and see whether you can do it better. Because you'll recall that we had an arrangement to have various activities in Mpumalanga. And some of the activities could not succeed, not because they are not ex-workers, but because there was no funding to transport them. I'm not sure the extent to which you will be able to consider either availing the resources for making sure that they are able to be transported, or you are able to avail your mobile per municipality, so that all these ex-workers, that the data that is sitting in constituent office, because there's a data that is currently sitting in constituent offices, because of the inability to transport them, because you said members must transport them, and it was not possible for members to transport them because of the costs that are involved in the transportation, and as a result, those activities could not succeed. But as we speak, all constituent office got a huge number of people that are in their list who need to be taken through the process. So the issue, therefore, of either making funding available for making sure that they are transported, or alternatively, make sure that the mobile that was displayed when you went to Swaziland, then it's made available. We've got an outreach program that goes up, I mean, municipality per municipality, because the district one doesn't work, because it becomes very costly from the transportation point of view. But if it's a municipality per municipalities, then it becomes manageable and affordable from a transportation point of view. So that's one issue that one will appeal that you need to consider, because when we're dealing with the deputy minister's office, they also didn't have budget for transport, but they expected us to transport those people, and it became impossible. So I'll really appeal that we need to look into that and consider the other alternative model that will make sure that people does have access to that service. And then on the legislative process, I still don't get where, what stages are you going to be engaging upon, and what should we expect? Because in your APP, it's just an annual target that says report on submissions for legal management, organizational service delivery, framework administration, without necessarily saying, in terms of pulling together this legislative process, of pulling together this law that is currently confusing in terms of the management of this work. Where are we? Because last time you'll recall, you reported that you're working with the Department of Labor and the Department of Minerals, and then you are pulling together, you've got a team that is working on coming up with a new legislation. But we don't get a sense as to where is the process and when are you intending to at least conclude this issue. And then the establishment of the one-stop centers, just want to, what informs the location? What criteria do you use? I'm raising it in the context, for example, if you're saying, no, in Swaziland we're going to have it at Hlatikhul, I would have thought that the most densely populated population in Swaziland, it's Hoho and Manzini region, as opposed to Hlatikhul. And the majority of the people that were working in the mines here in Gauteng are dominantly from these two regions. But Hlatikhul is at a corner there in the border of Piet Retief and KZN. And it's at a far corner. I'm not sure whether it was Swaziland government that said, no, this is where the best located is, because access the people to access that office, because the majority of the people, about 70% of the people, are in Hoho and Manzini. So the accessibility, therefore, will be very difficult. I know Swaziland, because I work underground there during those years. and then the other issue that I just wanted to get the clarity is the 5% of unpaid compensation claims prior to the 31st of March to be paid. And then you're saying each quarter you are going to pay 1%. I'm not sure it's the 5% of what in terms of the figure, because there must be a figure somewhere that you relate to the 5% to. That goes to the same with the just a question of the distribution, because on the 20% new compensable diseases, you are saying, I mean, when you dealt with the first one of 5% per quarter, you're saying 1, 1, 1, and then the last quarter 2%, that makes 5% in your view. But when you come here, you're saying the target is 20%, but each quarter you'll have 20%, 20%, 20%. So if you follow that logic of that one of 5%, 1, 1, and 2, it then gives you 80%. Can you clarify how you've dealt with that? Because it's confusing me when I'm reading it, when I'm comparing that and that one. And that 20% is 20% of what as well? So that at least we've got an understanding. The 70% of controlled mines and works paying levies is the 70% of how many mines that are supposed to pay, and what is happening with the 30%? Why the 30% is left out? Why not 100%? Just to get an understanding. And then on the financials, you're saying when you're talking, you are expecting that you'll also be dealing with the 14, 15, 16. But here in your APP, you are only dealing with 12, 13, and 14. But you're saying now by the end of like this financial year, you'll also be concluding the 14, 15 one, and possible the 16, 17. But here in your APP, it's only 12, 13, and 13, 14. So it doesn't correlate to what you're saying and what it's in the APP document. If you can just clarify the discrepancy as reflected. Thanks very much.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. I think in also appreciating the report, just got some, just two questions and a comment. The area of ex-mine workers and the claiming thereof is quite a complex environment. I'm raising this because our people, they become vulnerable to those people who will come and promise them things that are not there, claiming that they are going to assist them. You will understand the case in point of the Eastern Cape, where there was a myth that there is money which is kept by Bishop, and therefore people must go and demand. And there is a fraudulent, I'm saying there are fraudulent processes in that area. I may be asking a very unfair question because I'm not quite sure the capacity and the ability that you are having. I'm not quite sure what then becomes the role. I don't get it, the role of the trade unions, irrespective whether it's solidarity, but at the end, it's mine workers, and therefore everybody, or is it a man solidarity concerned with their members? NUMSA is the new kid in the block in terms of the mining sector. Are they concerned with their and your M are making? Is there any, apart from them being in the task team, is there some work that trade stakeholders are playing in assisting our communities? I was in the Eastern Cape in one meeting. You will know that in the Eastern Cape there's the issue of polygamy. There are children that say, I'm the child of this person from the first wife, from this. And so I'm saying it's quite a complex, and I want really to commend you that you are in this. But there is still a lot to be done. In particular, the role that is to be played by the trade unions in ensuring that our people are empowered. I made a case in point. I said, go to King Williamstown. I don't know, the last time, before local government elections, there's a place where there's a man from somebody, I've forgotten the name, who's creating a confusion, who's from either from Queenstown and whatever. And our people are vulnerable. But there are also those that come in and so in the work that you have done, in moving forward, I'm sure that you will still, want to congratulate you. The second area, people are moving around, they're mobile. They will come, they are frustrated in the Eastern Cape because there are no jobs, they come to the Western Cape, they fell ill. Do you have, if my memory serves me well, you have the Department of Health, if I'm correct, have contracted doctors that are to specializing in examining those that are coming in with chest complications, chest illnesses, but they will be doctors that will be able to pick up that this is because this person was. How do you track those that will come from Matakere will go to PE, think that there is something in PE, move from PE to Western Cape, from Western Cape, and they felt sick, and obviously they are then to be referred to you by the doctor, that's, or doctors are just seeing them, and they treat them as just chest complications, and it ends up there. So I just want to, I may be asking a very difficult question, maybe an unfair question, with the magnitude of the work that you are handling, but I do think that I thought that it's important that I raised that. I'm quite worried that there is a trade union that is not part of the... I'm worried. The former trade unionist, I'm worried. How is it that you bring all of them together? Is it... Where does AMCO get a report, if I may ask, from the task team, if I may? For argument's sake, it may know that you are here. What if you are accused? I'll just make an example. You are accused as the committee that we have sidelined the other trade unions, whereas it is not in our. We have invited CCOD, and it was correct for CCOD to come with stakeholders. But how do you ensure that as you do your work, you don't muddy it with issues that could have been prevented? I want to, when you will be coming back, maybe as the committee will still sit and check when to bring to call my bosses. And one member said, mine owners. I think there is going to be some time when we will have to, because there are some issues that we think that as we are dealing with this issue of ex-mine workers, how then as the portfolio committee on health, we are then able to ensure that people are not, they don't contract some other challenges because of the environment, as Honorable Maisela was saying. Maybe at an appropriate time, we will have to look into that. So trade unions are here, mine bosses are here, unfortunately mine owners are not here. Mine owners are not here, because at the end, we think that that is the team, as the portfolio committee, that at some point we must really check, because we have got constituency areas. You keep on talking about our constituencies, and that's where all these people are. That's where all these challenges that we are faced with. I was going also to raise the issue that Honorable Mashalela was raising in terms of bringing the people together. There's that tendency of relying either the Department of Health or to members of Parliament in our constituency areas. We don't have money. The few rands and cents that we're having won't be able to assist you, and therefore we communicate with us so that we sit down if there's going to be an activity in a particular area, sit down. The last issue that I think Honorable Ndaba raised, which is very quite important, please, your awareness program. We must feel it. I mean, PE, I must feel it. When I open, we've got community radio stations. We have got community news papers. We don't feel. So that our people become empowered, so that our people understand, so that we are then able ourselves, because we are asked difficult questions by communities. Not that we are unable to answer, we do. But we do think that they will say, but why are we not told these things? And therefore, trade unions and also mine bosses and mine owners, the awareness must not be only the responsibility of CCOD and the Department of Health. I do think it is it's one thing. This area of ex-mine workers, it does not need us to put politics in it. Because it's about my brother. It's about your sister. It's about her child, who happened to be a mine worker, not because of his or her own liking, but because of the circumstances and the environment, politically and ideologically. So we are raising these things not because we are not appreciating what you are doing. I thought I must raise those comments and those questions so that as we move forward we are, and we hope when you be responding, we'll also, so if you separate some of them, some of our questions are process issues in terms of the social responsibility of the Chamber of Mines and mine bosses in different areas, and some is also about the issues of the ex-mine workers. So I thought I must just make those comments and questions and so how you will respond. If trade unions want to also respond, it's fine. Stakeholders, it's up to you.
No, firstly to thank you and the committee members for the support that you've given us. It's been a difficult journey, and I didn't want to go back to the slide of what we inherited, 32 rooms of files, some of them just thrown around, etc. But we've come a long way, and we appreciate the sentiments. The same. What I'm going to do is just to demonstrate the reference database. So I'm going to swap to the end while this thing, because you'll see what the reference database, and that I'm just going to start with that, what we want to make available to the constituency offices. We need an internet-based link, and that's all it is. And then when somebody comes in and says, I'm Barry Kisnasamy, I worked in a mine, you can look it up on the database and it will tell you what you need. We are hoping, if things work according to plan, again, these are what we've got to do is, and coming back to the point about why we've got 12, 13, and 13, 14, we thought we should put in what we can deliver on. But if we do deliver the entire 16, 17 financial year, then at least we have covered that, because we are still dependent on some rate limiting steps like resources and the financial statements, and also Auditor General deploying resources as well. But I'm just going to swap while I'm answering the questions, and Andre will just show the database so that you know what you'll see in your constituency office in terms of that process. So I'm just going to swap across to Andre while I answer some of the other questions that he's setting up, because... So, Chair, while Andre is setting up, the issue around the funding processes, so some of these questions I'm going to take and give you a combined answer in terms of the issue. So one of the issues is that the compensation fund does not have an investment committee. It doesn't have a benefits committee. So typical funds, and again, learned members here know about these things. When we talk about having a compensation authority linking up to the policy and legislative reform that we're looking at, is ultimately you're saying you need a management committee, a benefits committee, and an investment committee. So that shows you then, and then the investment committee takes into account what Honorable Dr. James has pointed out, that through the actuarial valuation report, you'll say, here's 1 billion rand that will never be realized. We can then put it into a 10-year fund. I mean, not living hands. We've had problems with losing funds in dubious investments. But you actually have an investment committee that oversees that and actually gives you proper advice. So your comment is taken in terms of, and this is some of the policy and legislative changes we want about creating a compensation authority or whatever we want to call it, but having new governance structures as opposed to this governance structure. The Auditors Committee, by the way, is not in the Act. It came because of the Public Finance Management Act. The only structures in the Act, or Dumois Act, is the Advisory Committee and the Risk Committee. And those structures basically really had no teeth. And as I pointed out, the Risk Committee is not even functional, because the Act makes it clear that the chair, deputy chair, comes from the Department of Mineral Resources. And if they are not present, although there are trade union reps and employer reps on it, but it's a non-quorate committee. So those are some of the things we wanted to change. So that's quite clear in terms of this. And because we now have a proper actuarial valuation, remember the previous actuarial valuation reports were never approved. In fact, they were disclaimed by the Auditor General.
So it's, this is the first time, Chair, in I think 20 years of the fund, if it stands to be correct, that we have an approved actuarial valuation report by the Auditor General. So that's a major step forward about knowing the liability of the fund and then feeding that into the financial statements of the fund. And based on that, that's why we can do things like the levy calculations, etc., in terms of this. So our point is noted about having proper governance structures that will then oversee and then and do proper financial management and financial planning. The regional flow of funds, that's quite correct. The 11 countries, the 11 one-stop centers, there is one plan for Zimbabwe, there's one plan for Malawi. I stand corrected, but there's 8 countries, 11 centers, and you know, 3 of the countries have got 2 centers each, etc. But there is definitely one for Zimbabwe. We have at this point in time, remember the points I made, Chair, is that we thought we'd tackle Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Mozambique, because right now there's an active mine worker flow between these countries and South Africa. Zimbabwe, Malawi, Zambia stopped some time ago, and Dr. James's book highlights some of the issues, you know, in a very good work that he's written up on the history of mining in South Africa, and particularly migrant labor. But we haven't stopped that. We do have a list of names that's come through. And, of course, I've got to still, again, point out, seek permission from the minister to travel. So we thought, at least, let's deal with the immediate neighboring countries where we have an active migrant labor process, and then ultimately reach out to the countries. But the one-stops are coming in, and the link process will take place with us. And we will track regional flow of funds, ALA, the model that you asked for. As I've shown now, with the SADC breakdown of 70 million can be broken down into, you know, 20 million in Lesotho, 5 million in Mozambique, etc., etc. And ultimately, we're breaking it down also by province so that members know where the flows of funds are coming in. So that's the process of the one-stops. Submission of reports, yes, with the annual report, remember we have to produce an annual report and annual financial, audited financial statements. We now have that for 10-11 and 11-12. We're just preparing the final framework, you know, in terms of how it comes to your committee. So, Chair, it will come through. The other financial reports are unaudited, so it's up to you. We can make that available to your committee, and we can give you unaudited performance reports because we do quarterly reporting, etc. We'd be quite happy to come and present that, but it's unaudited. Remember, 10-11 and 11-12 is audited for now, so that at least you have an external party, the Auditor General, who's actually looked in and decided on that. But we welcome to give you other reports as well as you'd want. The redress of findings. At this moment in time, the main finding on the qualification in the 11-12 financial year, so 10-11 was disclaimer, there were still problems, but it was a restatement because the previous 10-11 was a disclaimer. So it was just restatement of figures from the actuarial valuation report backdated to the 10-11 financial year. 11-12 was a qualification on revenue because that links to this issue around the register of controlled mines. So because we don't know what's the denominator, is it 900 controlled mines? Is it 100 controlled mines? Is it 252 controlled mines? And what's the source documents? Because the Auditor General is saying you just can't come up with a register that you might have dreamt up. Where's the source documents for it? So the Auditor General has done a particular thing where they went, they have a lookup key through the legal SaviNet, where they can actually look for government gazettes, and they then picked up that there was a discrepancy between our register and what they had found. And that was the qualification that they made. And because that qualification was on the denominator of the register, and that's why we now have a technical team working with the Deputy Commissioner's office, and we're strengthening that whole process about the register of controlled mines in terms of process. The other issues were minor issues in terms of in the 11-12 financial year, we didn't have a strat plan. We didn't have an APP. Its members have memory, and I'm not sure how many of you were present in those portfolio committees at that stage, but that's why you had serious problems, because there was no strat plan, there was no APP, there was no regular reporting structures, etc., etc. So those were the compliance issues. So Auditor General, but the main finding was around the fact of the revenue. So that's why they disqualified us. The others were saying, well, sort out governance, and you know, we know you're on your way now because you've got functioning committees, etc. Outreach programs, yes. In Mpumalanga, we had a very good meeting with Deputy Minister Oliphant and the Mpumalanga caucus. I didn't know that there were different provincial caucuses at Parliament. But we had a very good meeting, and this was raised with us. And there were two things that came out of that. And I'll get Ms. Padesi to answer directly now about how we go about the outreach activities and also address the Mpumalanga issue. There's some good news that are coming up on that, but we'll talk to you in a minute. So one of the key areas is the issue around the fact that the outreach program is driven through DMR, Deputy Minister Oliphant. because we felt that because of his background in mining, his leadership, while we still work with the mining companies and the trade unions, so all the trade unions that are present here, including EMCO, and Chair, I take, I mean, your points are well taken in terms of the fact that two trade unions were not present today could see it, that the commissioner or the thing. Unfortunately, I could only get funding for what I call advisory committee members, and my law at the moment had prevented me from bringing on. So that's one of the issues we want to do, is make the law much more representative, that all constituencies are represented, including ex-mine worker constituencies. Because one of the big issues with DIMWA, it only covers current trade unions and current employers. But the ex-mine worker constituency base is a big grouping. So we feel that either through representative lawyers who might, or representative ex-mine worker associations, they should also be part of a future governance structure for this compensation authority. So one of the issues we had was a big problem in terms of the transportation of the mine workers. We go through a very formal process of meeting the local political office bearers, the local government, the municipal mayor, etc., and the traditional leadership. In many of our constituencies, traditional leadership. So we work through them in terms of that process, and then there's a mass meeting call that we work with the provincial government structures, and these are specific programs then with, like, the Mpumalanga constituency grouping of MPs. That deputy minister. But maybe, Ms. Padesi, you want to quickly talk to that, and then I'll then hand over after you to Andre, just to demonstrate the database and what you'll see in your constituency office and when you get access to it. Ms. Padesi has been managing the outreach programs on our behalf with Deputy Minister Godfrey Oliphant.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the comments in respect of the outreach programs, I want to repeat, are well taken, because these are ideas and suggestions that we can work on. But in terms of direct response to some of the questions that the honourable members were asking, it's important to indicate to you that DMR is now going on a mobile campaign blitz. So it's a program that's going to take the mobiles to answer you as well, sir, to all the constituency officers. So at the moment, Gauteng has made available its mobiles, and we've spoken to the Premier of the Northern Cape because we found mobiles that are standing there and that can be used. We found 17 of them in Kuruman. I have pictures in case they deny that, so we do have that. The most important thing in terms of ex-miners and the outreach program is ex-miners want communication. So if they've come to you in the last 3 weeks, we have sent out 65,000 bulk SMSs to anybody who's been at an outreach program to say to them that their application is with us and so forth. So we have done that. We also have a program to collect information from all your constituency officers when ex-miners are visiting them. In terms of, Honourable Member, your question on the language, English is the least used language in any of the outreaches. And some members were present at our last outreaches. Actually, we use the language most common to the area that we are going to, that I can attest to. So I'm very silent at some of those outreach programs in terms of my limitation of language. So that's there. The TEBA database is being shared. We're getting them, but please be aware that not everybody is on the TEBA database. So we do have problems around that one as well. And we are, I think it's valuable for us to take the suggestions of the radio stations, etc. But when we are mobilizing, like we did for the Mpumalanga last one, we did use the radio stations, the constituency offices, and all of that. The member there can attest to that. So as a result of that, we had a huge turnout at the stadium. And I think what bothers us in the outreach is our own capacity to manage that number of people, because those who were present know that we finished very late that night. Chair, in terms of the other outreach programs, we have covered all provinces so far. So we can name them. We've done all provinces so far. And a quick update, the Burgersfort and Kuruman tender has been awarded. So we're hoping to start work there within the next 2 or 3 weeks on the actual building of Burgersfort and Kuruman, and we're hoping to open it in by the first week of August. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thanks. And we walk through structures on the ground. Just to say that in conclusion on the outreach activities, all the trade unions have invited us to visit with them. NUM has outreach activities where they have in Valcom, etc. And then we go and set up a stand, with the MBOD, CCOD banner. They also bring the Provident Funds, etc. Solidarity has been doing the same. NUMSA we are in discussions with right now. And we actually, through the presidency, are actually having individual meetings, stakeholder meetings with the trade unions themselves. In fact, today I was supposed to be in VidBank with AMCO. And I had to cancel chair because of getting an early morning flight to be on time for this meeting. And I was going to be with UASA at midday today. So we postponed that. Yesterday I was with NUM, with the senior leadership of NUM at the NUM offices, briefing them about the policy changes, the legislative changes and updates, etc., etc. And we have a meeting with Solidarity next Monday at their offices in Centurion. So we actively, notwithstanding all the issues, we actively on the ground. Harmony, and maybe Mr. Van Vieren will talk to it, is starting a program in 2 weeks' time to track 25,000 ex-employees of Harmony in Valcom. So the industry itself is trying to do what it can to come to the party, and you might want to talk to them. But let me just hand over to Andre very quickly so that you demonstrate what you will get on your constituency if we sign the non-disclosure agreement, because you can only use our database for the activities of the work of the CCOD and MBOD. You can't use it for any other work. Andre?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. So this is an online searching tool that's hosted on the internet that allows anyone that we give access to search our database and see whether individual has got outstanding claims. So this is the page where you're going to land. You'll see most of the people that we give access to are external users, which means they only have access to certain fields. So then it allows you to search for an individual on a various number of fields. So for example, you can search on his metro number, his bureau number, his commissioner reference numbers. These are more internal numbers to the CCOD, but then his external reference numbers will be in his industry number, his ID number, passport number, first name or surname. So just to demonstrate, I'm just going to put in a surname there. I think the last one that we found something there. So if I put in just the name and I search, you see, then it brings you to this page. So make it a bit smaller. That shows you all the claims that we have for anybody with a surname from Vernikerk, limited to 15 records. If you want more detail, then you have to put in an additional field to narrow it down to the specific individual, because we don't want people to access our complete list via this reference database. So then you can go into the detail of the claims. So for example, if you look at the first one, you'll see there's a color coding, the green and the red, for claim status and BME status. Green means he doesn't have an outstanding claim, and for BME status, it also means he's not due a BME. This one, for example, this person is due a BME. I just want to see if I can...
BME is benefit medical examination, the two-yearly examination we have to provide. So a frontline receptionist can immediately tell Vernikerk that we need to book you in to the nearest one-stop service center, or the mobile clinic is coming next month to the area. So that's how our call center agents can actually work this thing out, and that's what your people can do. And if they've got a claim due, it will also say that there'll be a claim due to you. We're going to come back to you within the week about it, and then let's update your local contact details, etc. Now, we're hoping to use this ultimately through the presidency to work with the Financial Services Board to add a third column, where if you have a claim due to the 1970s fund, a pension fund, or a provident fund, there might be another column which says there's a claim in another fund, and we can come back to you. So that's what we want to actually move towards, so the one-stop service concept for the individual.
Thank you, Doctor.
And then you can get into the individual claim.
Yes, then you can go into the claim, and it will show you detail of the claim. So you can see exactly what it was, and the specific claim is already been paid. So if he does inquire, you can show him that he had a claim for a permanent disability, but it was paid on 11 September 2009. And all our 500,000 mine workers, you can look them up via this database.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Henry. So this is what we want to make available to you via your constituency offices or other structures that can use the database. So I'm just going to move on to the point about the prevention was noted. I said we should not be in a job. I have an occupational medicine background, public health background, and for me, prevention was the name of it. Unfortunately, prevention sits in the gambit of the Department of Labor and Department of Mineral Resources. So the Mine Health and Safety Act is meant to create the preventive interventions, occupational exposure limits, you should be doing inspections, etc. And hopefully at some stage, Chair, under your leadership, you could call a combined meeting of the three portfolio committees to look at this. But you raise an important point now about the environment. Unfortunately, it sits in a fourth committee, Department of Environmental Affairs. So our compensation fund is very narrow. And why we needed the TEBA Record of Service? Because there's a concept called controlled mines. So you need to have worked in a controlled mine in order to access compensation benefits from this fund. If you didn't work in a controlled mine, then the fallback position might be the Rand Mutual Fund or the QIDA Fund in the Department of Labor. So what we're doing is, as we're segmenting the database, now that we're having wood for the trees debate, we then want to take out those colleagues that don't come from a controlled mine and then go to Rand Mutual or QIDA. Or there might be an issue of coming back to this committee and Treasury to say that these were often mines, the risk committee didn't work, and maybe the state has to now pay for these people that now have silicosis, etc. Our main issue is that silicosis, coal workers' pneumoconiosis, obstructive airways disease, and the three or four, they generally are linked to mining. Asbestos is the big problem, where asbestos is linked to environmental exposure. It's very unlikely you will get silicosis from a mine tailing. There's no work that's been done on that scientifically at the moment that says from a mine tailing that you would get asbestos. But you will definitely get, silicosis. But you'll definitely get asbestosis from a mine tailing. And that's the Prieska problems, the Penge, the Kuruman, Bergersfort, etc. Now the key area is that regulation is done for mine tailings and rehabilitation, it's Department of Mineral Resources. For environmental health issues, it's partly Department of Health, but mainly Department of Environment Affairs. I don't have an answer on that one. This is a very difficult one in terms of, and we've got a whole lot of cases that have come through on mesothelioma, the cancer is linked to asbestos, where people claim to have worked in a Penge mine, etc. And there's no record of service, and I can't be reckless. So these are the issues that we are finding about now that we have segmented the populations, where we do have a record of service, no record of service, and the latest chairperson, if you just pick up fraudulent records of service. But because we now have an open database with Jeffco was the big mining company for asbestos for many years. There's an Asbestos Relief Trust, which was set up as a settlement trust, and also TEBA. So we're now picking up, because of electronic link databases, that we are picking up fraudulent records of service. So these are all the problems that desperate people are looking at, but we are trying to resolve that issue separately as well. So on the environment, it might be that in the initial report on prevention of occupational injuries and occupational diseases, DMR, DOH, and DOL. But on the environmental issues, you have to go one step further with Department of Environment. And these are clear-cut mandates, and some of us we'll give you technical advice, but we can't overstep mandates. And that's why we're working through the presidency, where the presidency brings all of us together, and all these departments are present, and maybe Ms. Bana will take that forward in terms of then the process for Minister Adebe, and that might be an important discussion to have with them about how do you look at the consequences of environmental degradation on human health and animal health and plant health, and who deals with that consequence. I don't have an answer on that one. So prevention, the Bergersfort one-stop service will be for occupational lung diseases. And of course, we'll try and work at that, but if there's some way of reaching out to your counterparts in environment or local provincial environment, then we've got to do some more work on that. And maybe, I don't know, Dr. Pele, if it comes up at NMC, the environmental health colleagues maybe could do a special blitz in then advise Department of Environment. We have an environmental health section in the Department of Health. It's run mainly through local government, but there is a section also at national, which Dr. Pillay might want to influence, particularly with the work you are saying, with the dust fog and all that. The main problem at the moment is, electricity has done a lot for our people, notwithstanding the problems around pricing. But previously, the main contributor to lung diseases, respiratory diseases in general, was indoor air pollution from cooking, from wood fire and coal fire stoves. So if you remember those early days of no electricity, that contributed a lot to people's poor health. But notwithstanding now the issues around mining, hopefully you'll convene a meeting of mine owners at some stage and maybe raise these issues with them. But we'll also try and do that.
Chair, may I make a 10-second intervention? Am I allowed? Just to say that we've signed on through the Department of Health onto the health security agenda, the global health security agenda, which covers all the domains in terms of threats. So it's chemical, it's biological, it's nuclear, it's a whole range of them. And it's through the Department of Health that it's done. So you really need to talk to the DG about that. Sorry.
All right. Thanks, Honorable Chair. On the issue of our 70% unpaid claims, I pointed out that I need 200 million. So we've costed out. If I get 200 million per annum, then we will reach, you know, as Honorable James has pointed out, there is a grouping that we will never find. I mean, it's just the nature of things, but we can still try as much as possible. But at the current resource constraints, this is what we talked with the management team as to what we could deliver on. So, Chair, I'm in your hands. I last year asked the department for additional funding, which was rejected when the minister was present. And I don't know if the same, but we are talking to the gold mining companies and the Chamber of Mines. They have come to the party. But I think people are waiting there's also the big issue around the class action settlement. So hopefully if all of these things get resolved within the next 6 months, we might get additional funding. So we've put in what we can into the APP and the strat plan about what is achievable for us. The 30-70% is about the legacy problem of 100,000 claims. The denominator is 100,000. So that's what we did when we put the database together. We have 100,000 claims. Of the 100,000 claims, 60,000 are TB. 20,000 are first degrees, where the lung is compromised 10 to 40%, and another 20,000 are second degrees. The TB claims are a bit problematic because it's for loss of earnings for TB, and we have to get back to the companies about this loss of earnings business. But let's leave it at that for now, that's the denominator is 100,000. So when we're saying 30%, it means 30,000 are found and paid. And when we look at the 5%, then it's, because we worked on last year's figures, we hit 5,000 last year. So we thought that at least, let's say, we'll maintain the 5,000 to 6,000 payments per year, and that's where the 5% comes from. That's the legacy issue from before 2015. After 2015 is this issue where we worked with Treasury, and some of us were present with the Treasury officials and the Accountant General. And they said, okay, legacy is one thing, but what are you doing about the current claims? You must not add this to the legacy problem. So if a new claim comes in today from Bizana, can you guarantee that it will be paid if it's compensable in 3 months? And that's where it comes in about that 20%. So the 20% means that it's a moving target. If 100 new claims came in today from Bizana, we should pay 20% of that within. So that's the tracking systems that IP Capital is putting in internally. And that's why the denominator will be moving, because it's a new application. So as you get that application for that month, it will be 100 new applications, and 20% should be paid month one registration, month two within 3 months. So that's where the 20%, and that's why it's not an 80% cumulative, but it'll be 20%, and it'll be a moving target as we go forward. Yeah, so it would completed documents. There's about 15 documents that have to be filled in as well, but that's, you know, something we're trying to do. So that's where the 5%, 30%, 70%, and the 20% comes from. I dealt with some of the oversight committees and things. These were the problems in the past, disclaimers. Remember I said we had 7 disclaimers. So we never had functioning advisory committees. We never had functioning audit and risk committee. The risk committee did not function from 1993. This is the committee that's meant to advise the minister on which mines should be controlled and new hazards like diesel particulate emissions causes the cancers of the bone marrow and some leukemias and lymphomas. So diesel particulate emissions should have been told by the risk committee that this is what's happening. Minister of Health, can you gazette a risk committee? Because diesel engines are used often in the mining industry. Or nanoparticles is the latest thing that's come about, these very fine particles in smelters, etc. But when you've got a non-functional risk committee, you can't bring this to the attention of the minister. And the gazetting process has to take place through these things. Now, those are some of the, by not having these governance committees, then the Auditor General said, you're a disclaimer, because where are these committees that should be functioning and overseeing the work that you do? So those were some of the issues. Outreach we've covered, and we go through very formal processes working with ex-mine worker associations, local community organizations, etc. And I point out, we work through the traditional and municipal leadership at a local level. And of course, we had a major meeting with the constituency. I think Mpumalanga requested that through Deputy Minister Oliphant. But please, unfortunately, Deputy Minister Oliphant couldn't make today. He would have wanted to have come. But is that meeting in Pretoria, and I think tomorrow there's a caucus meeting that he has to attend. But he's been very active, and I think other constituencies could invite him to come and work through. And on the funding issues, DMR has made available some funding that we're in the final stages of sorting out. So we will be able to sort out the issue around transportation and meals as we go forward in this. And Ms. Pardes has pointed out that we're working with the health departments, provincial health departments, about the use of the mobile clinics. So again, we're trying, but we have to work through different structures. The legislative process. So the legislative process, we had gone on a tangent last year to try and integrate the two laws. And when the Department of Labor still felt that there were still deficiencies in Odemwa, as your committee is finding, we haven't done financials. Remember, we hadn't done the actuarial valuation last year when we had worked, we were working towards it. So the minister felt, you know, at this stage, both ministers, let's clean up the Department of Health. There's no minister wants to hand over a problem to another minister. So let's clean it up, let's do as much as we can, and that's when we came up with this issue around the clean break. So the clean break is saying, Minister of Labour, Minister Oliphant, we haven't yet caucused this position with it, but we are saying that new workers, then you don't have a problem because they have a database, there's a new worker that's starting, they come in under quota. But this ex-mine worker grouping and the current 400,000 workers, we will sort out in the Department of Health. So that's the two-phase approach in terms of the clean break principle. Then in terms of the legislative process, we are working towards a deadline of August because we have to get it into your parliamentary cycle for next year because we missed this year. So we have to get it, we're working backwards from August. I'm advised by Dr. Anbin Pillay and them because we have to get it through a cabinet process, etc., with the stakeholders. So we think we know where we are. We're in the final stages of mandated positions from the trade unions. Hence, I've been meeting individual trade unions starting yesterday. And we're in a finalization process of meeting the chief executives of the mining companies and the Chamber of Mines. So Mr. Van Vieren is very busy at setting up that meeting with the mining company executives. We need a mandated position on this issue called the clean break and the amendments to the DEMOA. The amendments to the DEMOA then are new governance structures. What is the model for service delivery? And thirdly, where should it sit? Should it still sit in the Department of Health? Should it be with the Financial Services Board? Should it be in any new structure? And we need the advice of parliamentarians to advise us on that and the legal processes in terms of the process. As I pointed out, the current Department of Health structures don't help us. I can't get to Zimbabwe overnight. I can't deliver. If I want to go to Eastern Cape, I've got to get permission. Now, Rand Mutual doesn't have to do these things. They set up a structure, they contract. The fund is also not flawed in a sense it covers the full cost of healthcare, the full cost of administration, etc. So those have been the discussions. So to the members here, we are about 90% clear on the principles. We are then going to have to work on a drafting committee with legal advisors and then get it into the cabinet process and then get it to your office. We hope, Chair, and we really plead into your committee, and Minister was pleading with you last year as well, that you will finalise this before, you know, the parliamentary cycle next year in terms of then getting a new Odemwa in place, in terms of the two processes. So that's where we are. We've done enough of the consultations, but we're waiting for the final endorsements by the trade unions and the stakeholders. Remember, it's their fund between the trade unions and the employers. We are only an administering arm that's delivering on this agenda. And I found out some of the governance deficiencies. For example, investment committees, benefits committees, etc. One-stop location. So the one-stop location is dependent on the government of the country. So again, we don't impose. We've got some scientific data, as I showed you, where people come from in Swaziland, Mozambique. I should have contacted you beforehand in terms of your previous work in the underground, but maybe you'd have known more about the surface issues. But we are dependent on the government deciding where these one-stops go to. But the only issue we asked is that could it be linked to a public facility? So that if the mine worker has high blood pressure, he can then be referred immediately across the corridor and get sorted out. Now, the key area why the one-stops came about, Chair, was very important because this was also raised with the colleagues from the MPs from Mpumalanga. When mine workers used to go previously to Witbank Hospital or to, Nelson Mandela Academic, the mine worker says, I want a medical checkup because the people in Johannesburg want my documents. So the doctor then says, here's a pregnant woman who's about to deliver, here's a stabbed chest, here's a motor vehicle accident. Now I've got 20 emergencies and now you are saying you want a medical checkup. And you are healthy. So that's why we set up, and that's linked to your second process which you raised and some other colleagues raised, was about when people move around. Occupational medicine is a new specialty in South Africa, and occupational nursing are also new specialties in South Africa. So we have a dearth of professionals who can recognize a work-related problem. So when the average mine worker goes, they see a white on the chest X-ray, they diagnose it as TB, not realizing that this might not be TB, but it actually might be silicosis. It might be co-workers. And there's special technical, Dr. Machale and them just ran a program now with the International Labour Organization on radiologists. Even general radiologists have to be trained to recognize these patterns on the chest x-ray, because otherwise you'll see it just as a tuberculosis, until proven otherwise. So one of the big issues was the one-stops with the mobiles would train doctors and accreditation protocols that Dr. Machale is working on. Together with four of the medical schools have got occupational doctors. Unfortunately, Dr. Pillay is meant to convene them again because we reached out to them last time to say, don't continue to stay in Cape Town, Durban, Johannesburg. Can you accompany us to Shashai and Inambani and Burgersfort so that you can actually see what's happening on the ground and support local nurses and doctors to do the things, Chair, that you asked us of, to diagnose these occupational lung diseases. So there's very few of us. Dr. Machale is also an occupational medical doctor. The bulk of the occupational medical doctors work in the industry, so they don't work in the public sector. So they work for Harmony. That's why they could be seconded to us. They work for a big Sasol. They work for a multinational oil company. So the key area was a new model, but unfortunately, you know, along the way, I had to concentrate on this work to restructure the CCOD, MBOD. So occupational health has fallen by the back, but maybe we could resuscitate some of those discussions. And I raised it yesterday with NUM. What is NUM doing about occupational health? Because in international trade unions, they have full-time doctors working for trade unions. AFIDA, the Mine Workers Union in Australia, the Big Truckers Union in the United States. So we are also asking the same questions that you're asking, that you can't rely on some people. But if it's a collective movement between mine owners, mine managers, and trade unions, we can deliver a better occupational health service, ALAR, the prevention measures. But right now, we only have 40 occupational medicine specialists in the country. We have about 700 occupational medical doctors who have a diploma, and the bulk of that 700 work in the private sector. So we don't have the kind of, so that's why this ex-mine worker constituency or ex-farm worker constituency, with you know, when you're spraying fertilizers, they get affected by that. There's very little work in that, and that's something that we'll have to deal with the department on a human resource plan for this group, jointly with the industry. So the one-stop locations, I point out where it happens and things. I've dealt with the 5, 20, 70%. The complexity of the environment, you know, it's a political environment. This one is politics big time. Between intermediaries that try and fraud our people, I just pointed out now records of service are problematic. People promise you that they can get you your pension fund, your program. And that's why our outreach activities and working with constituency offices is important, because you are representatives of the people. And your office is then meant to give honest advice. So if we can build up capacity, we can then parachute on top of that in terms of the work you all do and we do, and dealing with some of these issues that people know. And everywhere we've gone, we've said this is a free service of the government of South Africa, to be supported by the mining companies, etc., etc. So it's a very complex environment because people are desperate, and often when we do the BMEs, etc. You've raised a whole range of issues about the trade unions and assisting communities, and hopefully I think this stakeholder forum, because we'll continue to bring this forum with us. The next time around, in terms of AMCO and UASA, I mentioned that unfortunately I will apologize to them, but I didn't have funding to bring them in because they're not members. But definitely for the next meeting, Parliament will raise funding to also make sure that the 5 trade unions in the mines and work sector, works by the way are the smelters and refineries, etc. And NUMSA organizes mainly in the work sector, AMCO of course coal mining and a bit of platinum mines. But we'll bring it. But they've been actively involved in the steering committee and the task teams on the reorganization of the Odumwa legislation. They've been fully participant, and they've been actively part of that process in terms of, we've not neglected them. It doesn't, the only neglect is not bringing them to Parliament, so we apologize for that. The 12, 13, 13, 14, I mentioned we might as well under-promise and over-deliver as opposed to over-promise and under-deliver. So we think we'll make it, but we stand corrected on that. That's why I mentioned it in this thing, but it's not in our ADP. It's in the strat plan as we go forward. We've raised, Chair, the same issue that you, that occupational health and safety is non-negotiable. It should be a combined effort of all of us in terms of trade unions and management and owners and industry-wide. And they can bargain on other things, but not on occupational health and safety. And I think we've got that consensus amongst everybody in terms of the process. And I point out that Harmony is taking a major program forward to track 25,000 ex-employees. They've also sent a team to Buta Buta in Lesotho, and I think they're going to go to Swaziland. But I think industry has begun to come to the party in terms of this process. Oh, the control mines, 70% paying and not paying. So, Chair, we're working on this register of control mines. Once we got that sorted out, then again, we need, you know, is it 900, 700? I think it's around 252, but we'll have that data probably by the end of June, July this year. Then the issue was to go and collect. Auditor General, we're working out a methodology with the Auditor General, because if it's 80% gold mines, we have to collect by risk shifts. It's a levy per risk shift. So gold mines pay, for example, 8 rand 50 per risk shift. Chrome pays 11 rand 50 per risk shift. So that's a reorganization of the levy system. But one of the issues was then to go and audit that the mining companies are actually telling us the risk shifts, etc., etc. So that's the inspections that we have to do. Again, we set ourselves, I've only got 3 financial inspectors and 9 health inspectors. So we're looking at a new model with the industry about how to tackle this issue and pull it together, hence the 70%, etc. The 30% or 20% who is not paying, some of them are not paid because they're saying, show us proof that we are a controlled mine. Now, we didn't have a government gazette. The other ones, 2 or 3 of the chrome companies felt that they are paying too much of a levy. They've written repeatedly to the Department of Health and previous commissioners about reorganizing the levy. We couldn't reorganize the levy until we had a proper actuarial valuation. Now that we've done that, hopefully some of these will come to the party in terms of the reorganization of the levy and payments on that. So that's where we are with that. So I think I'm always, Mr. Letella wanted to say something. And I don't know if any of the other comments, I know it's quite late. But Chair, I think I more or less covered everything. And again, I want to thank the members for their faith and trust in us and also complimenting us on the work we've done to date under very difficult circumstances in Johannesburg.
Thanks, honourable members. I think what is clear from a union perspective is that we inherited a punitive legislation towards the majority of our people, who are mainly mine workers and those who are in works. And there needs to be a time, I mean the buzzword now is radical, there needs to be a time where there needs to be radical legislative reform to address these issues. And I'm going to give just 2 examples of what we currently are subjected to as workers. When we can actually change that immediately. One is that out of the 15,000 workers who went for certification last year, 9,000 were found to be non-compensable. And I can assure you, the non-compensable part would refer to the majority who have not gone past the 10% threshold. So meaning that the progression of the disease has not gone beyond 10% of your lung function. But it's incurable. It's not going to cure. It's still going to be there. So we all say, no, go home. Come back when you are more sick and we will pay you. That is one example. The second example is, why do we have to put these degrees? A person comes, they said to be 10 to 40% first degree. We pay you a portion of the amount. Go home, come back after 2 years, and let's check if the disease has progressed. We know it's going to progress. Unless you die of a car accident on your way home after getting paid, then it would not progress. Why do we have to deal with these degrees? Why can't we just say, we've detected that you have silicosis or you have whatever lung impairment that is occupational related, and we pay you the maximum, you go home, and that's it. So all of this is basically continuing or perpetuating the legacy of punishment to our people who come from far, who still have to come and get services that are mainly centralized. Some of the detections are able to be detected because we're not sure if the service providers calibrate their equipment accordingly. And we remain with this legacy even today. So hence I'm saying there needs to be radical legislative reform. So the chair also asked what is it that the NUM or labor is doing in general. Chair, sometimes we get failed by the department, that the very same department that we're trying to assist. We engaged with the Chamber of Mines to establish an ex-mine workers project fund. The whole objective of the fund was to strengthen occupational health services in provincial hospitals. And we funded for 2 years. The whole project was for about 46 million rand. We fund a provincial hospital for 2 years, buy equipment, get everything that needed for medical services, occupational medical services. Post 2 years, the hospital must take over the services. And what has happened? When the project leaves, the services collapse. And those are some of the initiatives we engage on. And I'll just refer only to those that are health-related, which remains a big challenge. So I just wanted to indicate on that. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Members, for the questions and for the responses from CCOD and Labour. Obviously, we are dealing with a complex situation, emotive by its nature, because health is an emotive subject and it's an emotive sector. I think in the center, as all of you, as you have said correctly, that the sooner we deal with the issue of the legislation, have one integrated legislation, so that we're able to address some of these issues that have been raised by Labour, is going to be important. That's why I said initially that there are no politics involved here. We need to come together, united. We stand in ensuring that we assist our people, and exactly what you are raising. You are at this time, you are raising something that is quite sad, and we will have to look into that. All of us here have got that responsibility. Having said that, I want to thank you with the breakthrough that you have made around the issue of TEBA. You know that we have always been worried, but please visit one-stop shops. When we conducted an oversight in Nelson Mandela, we were not happy. Visit them. I'm not implying that. Please visit them, so that when you then come, and we'll be happy with the mobiles. But I don't know whether you do have, maybe working together with the Department of Health and ourselves in Labour, there must be monitoring of these mobiles. The last one which we have raised, I must be opportunistic, but I'll have to communicate with you. My constituency is in a peri-urban area, which is more farming. So I think I must also have some look into what would have been their conditions in terms of some. That's why I'm saying you are raising, it's an area that is ravaged by TB. We will not be sure whether it is really TB or it is a... Well, in this movement of people, in the outreach that you are conducting, sleep over this. I don't know whether it's not going to create more people to be fraudulent. These people have moved. They are in the informal settlement as we speak. They may not be aware of this projects and programs that are in Bizana, in Lusikisiki, in Matadien, because they have moved to Cape Town, they've moved to PE. I'm just making that example. Sleep over it. If it is an area that is going to wake up some open a can of worms, let's have some dialogue about that to see how best, because my fear is that we may leave people behind. We may, those that you say you can't find, whereas they are desperate somewhere, or they are perishing somewhere. So I thought you say, well, it's unfortunate that you are the last and at this hour, but it has been quite an important interaction, and I don't think it's the end. the more we, I think, now that there is an improvement, now that we have been putting pressure on you in various ways, I think we will have to look at the committee. When again are you to call you back as stakeholders, have a dialogue and interaction without being pressurized by time, because the sooner we address this issue of the legislation and working together, I think we'd have, and I personally, I think it's the legacy that we want to leave as this committee in this administration. By the end of 2019, we must be comfortable and say, this is what we have delivered to our people. Difficult, complex, emotive as it is, but I believe that if we can just put our emotions aside, political and otherwise, and say, these are our people at the end, irrespective of gender, creed, race, irrespective, and political affiliation. Because these conditions, they don't have any political affiliation. It's only that a person was just unfortunate and then has been a mine worker. Thank you very much, and we hope that when you come back again, you will come back with ladies, because I know that there are ladies in the trade union movement, there are ladies in the mine bosses, and yeah. But thank you very much. It has been a hard day, but I think we are learning as the day is. And thank you very much, Commissioner, and your deputy, of the hard work that you are doing with all the challenges. Our meeting stand adjourned.